Succession number 11322, row 2.
Mr. Napier, real toe.
I had the experience of standing in the waist when the Lebanon shell tore through the port side of the ship into the chief PO's mess and flat and came aft into the 4-inch magazine and burst, I think, just past the magazine. The draft and the force of the wind, the pressure coming up through that hatch was terrific. And at the same time, the chief torpedo gunner's mate was blown up through the hatch with the pressure shock wave. I was told by the damage control parties, one person I know very well indeed, but he went into the flat directly after the shell had passed through, and he recognized our blacksmith, a petty officer who was damage control party, and he went to touch him, and as he went to touch him, so he fell to pieces. He must have been burnt to smithereens, and I can't describe it at all, because there was nothing left of the person concerned.
What was the mood like on the ship when the ship turned away from the action?
Well, we were too busy fighting fires, the ship's company, especially forward. We were ablaze, our paint store forward was blazing away merrily, and we were on fire from the paint shop right to the bridge. We had jettisoned both aircraft, but there was still a lot of aviation spirit around on the decks, and people were busy up above washing down. So we didn't really know that we had finished the action. We had been making smoke. In fact, we'd set a smoke screen at the same time as the fires forward, and We turned away to get Y turret bearing again, as Y turret was on our quarter deck, the only turret aft, you see. And when there was only one gun firing, it was decided by the Commodore to pull us out of the action.
You said when you started to describe the action about the call to action stations, you used the phrase with no G. What did you mean?
Yes, the G after the action station sounded on the bugle was for temporary. It was a practice. The G, the one G afterwards, you see, after the da 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 da. Then followed by the G. That was practice. But it was followed by at the double. Da 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 da. And that was at the double. In other words, we had to get to our action stations as quickly as possible without any delay.
So you knew it was the real thing?
Yes, we knew it was a real thing.
Can you hum those again, the call to action stations and at the double?
Da 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 da. That's a G on the actions.
And the call and at the double?
Da 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 da.
In the action, did you see the Ajax and Achilles?
Not where I am situated. I was in the wastes at the time, and of course I was also on the starboard side of the screen leading down onto the quarter deck. So I was getting soaked with near misses coming over the ship's side by the 11-inch and 5.9 guns being fired by the Grabs Bay. And my mind was lying as if I wanted to lie flat and try and protect myself as much as possible, so I didn't see much of Ajax and Achilles.
Can you describe in detail the voyage from the River Plate area down to the Falklands?
Yes, I can. We were rather very busy at the time, in so much I helped clear out the damage control party who had been killed inside the starboard bathrooms situated on the starboard side of the ship. A lot of the people we pulled out, we recognised who they were, and others we had to shovel into hammocks and get them aft for burial. It took us. We stopped ship twice, I think it was, on the way down to the Falklands, and had the burial services on the quarter deck, and buried our personnel as we were going down.
So that clearing out of that area must have been a grim job.
It was. In fact, one can still smell the stench. I still have the stench in my nostrils right to this day. I can still smell it. Of burnt flesh and pickled with the salt water. It's a horrible, horrible stench. And it was with us all the way, all the time until we got back to Plymouth.
How many of them had been in there?
I think there were about eight or nine.
Who was in charge of that party that was doing that?
I think it was a Stoke Petty officer, I'm not sure.
Were you aware of the difficulties the ship was having in making its way to the Falklands?
Well, we had no difficulty at all making our way to the Falklands. We were still steaming at 20-odd knots. Mind you, the ship was down by the bows, but we managed to get the magazines emptied, pumped out. The magazines had been flooded in the meantime, you see, when A and B turrets were hit, the magazines were flooded, and they were pumped out, and we got the people who were drowned out at the same time, pumping out.
Was it a subdued atmosphere on the ship as you went down to the Falklands?
There was a quiet, death quietness. It was a funny feeling. One can't describe it, really. We knew who'd been killed, and we were just thankful that we were alive ourselves.
What happened at the Falklands?
At the Falklands, a lot of the people were taken off the ship and taken into the homes of the people in Port Stanley, as the ship was in such bad repair. In the mess decks, we had holes in the floor, and a lot of the people went ashore, as I said, with the families of the people of the Falklands, Port Stanley. I remained on board the ship, but there were times when families would take us ashore and give us a real good hot meal, as all our galleys and everything were wiped out completely, and we didn't have much time for eating hot food.
How did they treat you?
Oh, excellent. In fact, if I could only afford it, I'd go down to Falkland Islands to see the graves of the personnel who died whilst we were down there, and also to try and see the people that looked after us.
How much repair could be done to the ship in the Falklands?
We managed quite a lot of repair. In fact, the SS Great Britain was lying the hulk down there at the time, and we took a lot of the steel plates from the SS Great Britain and patched our ship's side up and made us watertight from her.
And the voyage back to Britain afterwards?
The voyage back to Britain afterwards, I recollect the renown and Ark Royal meeting us, and the company of the cruisers, I think it was Dorsetshire was one of the cruisers, I'm not sure. But we were escorted as far as Freetown, and we were picked up by Ark Royal and the Renown, and taken right from Freetown right up into the approaches of Plymouth with them, until off the western approaches we met about eight or nine destroyers who escorted us into Plymouth. But at the same time as we were met by them, one of the Blue Star liners, I can't remember the name, but she had passed quite close to us, and the men on board had waved to us and shouted to us, you know, as we were passing. But lo and behold, just as they got over the horizon, we heard a thump, terrific bang. She'd been torpedoed. We must have gone into a lot of U-boats, or U-boats had been waiting for us, and they'd missed the Exeter herself, and they'd torpedoed the Blue Star liner instead.
Did you hear any Lord Haw-Haw broadcasts about the Exeter?
Well, we heard whilst we were down the Falkland Islands the broadcasts from the American commentator in Montevideo, and we also heard from him that Lord Haw-Haw had stated to the German people that the Exeter had sunk on her way down to the Falkland Islands. We had heard that through the American commentator. We kept everything open, the voice pipe, the tannoy, open, and tuned in to Montevideo to see what was happening in the port itself.
How were you received in Britain?
Oh, the welcome coming into Plymouth Sound. We came in the harbour and anchored during the night in the outer harbour by the fort and breakwater. And a buzz had got round Plymouth that the Exeter was there. And when we got up in the morning and looked around us from the Plymouth Hoe, you could see was people lining all the way along the hoe right up through. And as the ship proceeded up harbour into Devonport itself, you had all the dockyard mateys, the tugs, sirens blowing, and everything. It was a tumultuous welcome.
Were you given some reception in Plymouth?
We were given a reception in Plymouth, yes, by the Lord Mayor. And of course, as we were approaching our berth in Devonport, Sir Winston Churchill came on board and gave his speech on the quarter deck. I can't remember what was said in the speech, but it was a speech which he made everybody feel proud of and everything. And he also stated that we could go on leave wearing our cap tallies with great respect, as the people of the nation of the country were proud of what had happened.
Did people recognise you as you went about on shore?
Oh yes, when you were wearing the extra cap badge, cap tally, you were recognised wherever you went.
What did they do?
I didn't get a chance to go ashore at all. We were taking part in too many parades. We went up to London, our first parade, and we were dined with Sir Winston at the Guildhall, London, after the march passed, and the presentation of the medals at Horse Guards Parade by the King George the Sixth and the Queen.
How did you come to leave Exeter?
I left Exeter to go into barracks after all the parades were finished and we were sent on leave. And I went into Drake Barracks and qualified in gunnery at Drake Barracks. And after leave, I qualified more gunnery, and I was given a pier-edge jump, as we call it, without any notification whatsoever. I found that I was drafted to a Canadian destroyer, the Fraser, and I joined her. I can't remember what date it was now, but I joined her just as I think the Dunkirk do was going on. But I didn't actually go to Dunkirk with her. I went down southern France with her. And we started off bringing quite a lot of personnel, army personnel, off a place called Saint-Jean-de-Luz. And from there we steamed up toward Bordeaux. And as we approached Bordeaux, it was dead at night. I was on duty between the two funnels of the destroyer on the .5 machine guns, and all I remember is a terrific thud, and realised that we'd been in collision with another ship. I found out that the ship was the Calcutta, HMS Calcutta, C-class cruiser. She came into Plymouth with the bridge of the Fraser on her forecastle a few days later. Well, I, being on the after part of the ship, we stayed afloat, the after part, but the forward part went down right away. And we had army personnel in that area. And we heard the screams and people singing out, "Roll out the barrel," singing the song, "Roll out the barrel, we'll have a barrel of fun." And it was a terrible thing because we couldn't do anything about it. The thing just disappeared. And of course, when the air was swallowed up by the sea water, as everything was flooded, you see, there would be no bulkhead from the bridge to the forward portion of the ship. And the water just poured in. And so she went down.
What kind of a ship was the Fraser, a destroyer?
Yes, she was a destroyer.
How do you think the collision occurred?
Well, I think it could have been the fact that the Calcutta had most probably been into Bordeaux and picked up the personnel she wanted, and she was steaming at about 20 knots, I would say, to be able to do that damage to a destroyer, to go right through. Mind you, the bows of those C-class cruisers were real reinforced bows. They were terrific. And they'd cut through anything, I suppose, at between 15 and 20 knots.
Why do people sing "Roll Out the Barrel" in these conditions of great danger and stress?
Well, I suppose it's knowing that there's something's happened, and they want to take their minds off what has happened, and they sing.
But quite often when I've interviewed people and there's some kind of disaster at sea, quite often they sing that particular song. Why that particular song?
I think at the time, it was a very popular song. Insomuch on the mess decks, especially whenever you came into the harbour after difficulties at sea, and you'd come in after a patrol, and it'd have a bit of a sing-song, and that'd be one of the songs sung, Rolling Out the Barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun.
The words seem rather incongruous for to sing, really, in conditions where people have been killed, though.
Yes. Mind you, the song became popular in 1940. It wasn't before 1940 that I'd heard the song.
When you were at Saint-Jean-de-Luz, what exactly did you do there? Can you describe what happened?
Well, I remember tanks coming down towards us. The Germans must have been so advanced that they could let fire at the Fraser. From a distance, we were what, about a mile off the beach, in the harbour. That's in Saint-Jean-de-Luz. I still remember that. We took quite a few French VIPs off at there also at Saint-Jean-de-Luz.
You mean politicians?
Yes.
Do you remember who they were?
I could not tell you, no idea.
What were the people whom you evacuated, what condition were they in?
Oh, quite good, well equipped.
With what?
The army were well equipped. They still had their arms.
And was it both British and French troops that you took off?
Mostly British.
Why was it necessary for British Royal Navy people to go onto a Canadian ship at that time?
Ah, now then, the Canadians didn't have any ACAC ratings trained at the time, and they sent RN personnel on board to take the positions of the machine guns. The machine guns were put on board whilst the ships were, the destroyers were over here in this country. And they didn't have the Canadians trained up for them, so they put the Royal Navy personnel on board them.
Was being on a Canadian ship much different from a Royal Navy ship?
No, not really. Discipline was a little more relaxed than the Royal Navy, but...
In what way?
Well, too much chumminess of surnames, Christian names. They were more, first name, more like American buddies. And
what did you call the officers?
Oh, sir.
So that was no different?
No.
Was the food any different on board a Canadian ship?
Oh, the food was better. They also had... better rations in the canteen. They call them the PX, the same as the Americans did. We had certain ration cards for chocolate and cigarettes with them, but I'd only started smoking cigarettes the day war was declared in the Exeter. So, of course, I had quite a lot of Canadian cigarettes, etc., and Canadian chocolate.
Did the Fraser carry out any other duties whilst you were on her?
No, they were the only duties, the evacuation of southern France, as far as I know. I was only on her for less than a month, I would say, until the collision.
Then you joined the Edinburgh?
I joined Edinburgh, yes, in the October 1940. Previous to joining the Edinburgh, I had done another gunnery course, and I'd picked up my leading seaman rate, the hook. And I was sent to the Edinburgh as a leading seaman AA2.
When you say the hook, you mean the anchor?
The anchor, the single anchor. I'd passed for leading seaman before the war. Before the war had started.
Can you tell me what the Edinburgh was like to serve on?
The Edinburgh was not a very happy ship. Totally different to the Exeter. In so much we had a lot of hostilities only personnel who were rather green to the sea, and they hadn't had sufficient training really, and they weren't the same as the old pre-war sailor. They weren't the same type. We found out that we couldn't leave our money on the mess decks, on the mess tables when we went to the bathroom for a shower, and of course that's when the rot set in, I believe, with the a different type of navy really. It was early as 1940. People you couldn't trust, and that's why I say she wasn't a happy ship.
What duties was the Edinburgh carrying out when you joined her?
We were doing mostly convoy duties, and we also made a raid into the Skadigat and Skagerrak to pick up Norwegian ships which were fleeing from Norway, and also some Swedish ships as well, and we escorted them back to the UK. Then we were doing alternative convoy, one Russian and one Malta.
One Russian and one?
One Malta, Malta convoy. There was one time we had a spell of the duties from the Malta convoy, and we took a convoy down to Cape Town. The convoy, I believe, was going out to the Far East and also going into the Red Sea area, and backing up the 8th Army.
What do you remember specifically about the Malta convoys that you took part in with the Edinburgh?
The Malta convoys, we had some near shaves, very much so. In fact, on one of the convoys we had our PV chains blown off our bows, and it put us in dock into Simonstown for a few weeks to get the PV chains and bow put back on onto the ship.
PV?
PV, paravane. Paravane chains. We had chains, four lots of chains going right down the bow to the bottom of the ship. And so the shoe used to work up and down, and on the end of the shoe you had two PV wires, paravane wires, with the PV attached for sweeping mines.
How did that damage occur? Can you describe it?
This was caused through a torpedo, motor torpedo boat attack, and I think quite a lot of the ships in the vicinity were firing low on the water, and they most probably caught our bow as well, and ripped the whole lot away.
So the convoys were from Gibraltar to Malta?
To Malta.
Which was the worst part?
As we neared the Strait of Pantelera, we found that we were getting high-level attacks, low-level attacks, and torpedo bomber attacks.